I have a question here on this material, so let me read it. It's handwritten. So if God needs, I address this if again. See, that's why I started off today with this if. But I read the question anyway now, because every time I read it, let that be a warning. If God needs a hypostasis to exist, does that not limit God in the same way that having and therefore needing parts would limit him? So if God needs a hypostasis to exist, does that not limit God in the same way that having and therefore needing parts would limit him? Why? In other words, we have said that, I'm going to rephrase the question, without this if, so I can answer it. I cannot answer a question that begins with an if. Not after what we have said. God does not have parts because he is not limited. So does the hypostasis limit God? That's the question. And the answer is this. Existence is not an attribute. And you say, oh, well, now that's very profound, isn't it? You know. So what have you said, really? Let me spell it out. A God, when we say God needs a hypostasis, that's not something that you can say. Because a God who lacks hypostasis does not exist. It's like a married man without a spouse, without a wife. It's like talking, if I say, now if water did not have the ability to make you wet, well, in that case, why do you call it water? So, similarly, let me just put it this way. I can simplify it this way. I might say, a God. And then I put down below, a God who exists. What is the difference between these two statements? A God. What's the difference between a God and a God who exists? The answer is nothing. This thing here is extra baggage that is in there trying to confuse me. A God who, when I say a God, I mean exists. If you say, well, look, what about Moloch? Does he exist? Of course he does. You can see his picture over there. You can go and chop him down, right? He is made of wood or stone or something like that. So I'm not discussing the reality of God. It could be a false God. So a God is a God nevertheless. And a false God who exists. And a God who exists, let me put it this way. If I say Peter, and if I say Peter who exists, now, that kind of language is not acceptable. Peter who exists. When I say Peter, I mean Peter who exists. If I say I saw Peter, I mean I saw Peter who exists. Who existed. So, when we say who exists, that's another way of saying who has being. And that's another way of saying, as a way of being, that's a hypostasis. So when I say, does God need a hypostasis, I am asking if God needs a way of being in order to be. And I say, does God need to exist? The same thing. Well, let me say this. God does not need to exist. What kind of sentence is that? That's not a sentence at all. That's not a sentence in the English language. God does not. Does God need to exist? So the question then, let me read it again. If God needs a hypostasis in order to exist, so that means if God is God, that's what it says, all right, does that not limit God in the way of having parts would limit him? So, that question is a non-question. It's been answered. I think it has been answered now. So I can let it go. I will erase this now. The point being that we cannot ask non-questions. I don't mind answering questions, but not answering non-questions. So we end up with saying that God willed man to exist. Did God will man to be good? Now here is that we're discussing now. I want to laying the foundations now for discussing free will. And so I've got to ask myself now: was God good? Yes, he was. Did he intend the man to be good? Well, after he made man, he looked at everything he made, and God said everything was very good. So was Adam good? And that question has been asked by human beings from the beginning of time. Even in ancient times, people asked that question, and they said, the Epicureans said that God is either is omnipotent, and he is also benevolent. That means he can do all things, and he is good. Why then do we have evil in the world? The presence of evil shows that God either is not almighty, or he is not benevolent. Because an almighty God can eradicate evil. And a benevolent God would want to eradicate evil. So if there is evil, and there is, since there is evil, God is either not benevolent, either he doesn't want to do away with evil, in which case he's not benevolent, or he cannot do away with it, in which case he is not almighty. Since one or the other is the case, then we must deny God's reality. There is no God. That's how they proved God's non-existence, if you like. Now, there is a flaw in that argument, but I don't need to take it up, because the purpose here is not to discuss the philosophy of the Epicureans, but to go on with the argument. The point I am making is that the question has been plaguing man from time immemorial. And even in the church, various statements have been made. One being that man was made good. Then I think it went to neutral. He was neither good nor bad. No, I think it was bad here. I may be wrong. I don't remember. I can't keep all these things in my mind. Man is evil, and we have to get the evil out of him. And then I think Mr. Armstrong changed it to neutral. Is that what happened? That's the order. Yes, neutral. But we haven't. I suppose the next one would be to say that man was good. None of that is really meaningful until you sit down and define your terms. You must always define your terms. You have to put limits on what, on the way you use the word. The word good is not ambiguous. We know what it means, but it is vague. It's vague. It sort of covers everything from, it covers even evil things. For instance, you say, in a prison of criminals, you can say, this one is better than that one. That's a better man, better man, better man. You know, you say good, better, and best, and so you can use the word good in anything. You can say mud. We know it's bad for you, or it's good for you, depending, it's good for pigs. Pigs love, you know, to be in sort of wet places. I mentioned that some place, and they corrected me. They say, no, pigs don't like that. They need to be absolutely dry and clean. I don't claim to know anything about animals. So I don't know what pigs like. Next time I find one, I'll ask him. So, man was made, and God looked and he saw man was very good. But what does that mean? When he saw that man was good, does that mean he was actually good? Or does it mean he was potentially good? Now, these are questions about definitions. Good in character or good in body. So let's take all these possibilities and analyze them. Physically, he was good. That means he was well ordered. When God made Adam, he put the limbs in the right place, and the ears in the right place, and the nose and so on, and everything was in perfect proportion. So physically, he could not be improved. Physically, he was good. Psychologically, he was good. He was well ordered. In other words, when God made man, man must have thought in a certain way. He must have felt in a certain way. And the balance was just right. And spiritually, he was good. Let me erase these and write these things in order. So he was physically psychologically and spiritually. When I say physically, I'm referring to body. When I speak about spiritually, I'm referring to mind. And when I say psychologically, I'm referring to soul. The word that if you are asking about that, I'm talking about the word psyche. Now, if you don't think that we can talk about that, then you cannot talk about psychology. So you make up your mind. Now, somebody asked me once, he says, look, I don't believe there is anything like soul. In that case, you cannot speak of that. You have to say ology. Only ology. Not psychology. Because if there is no psycho, then you cannot speak about psychology. You cannot pretend to speak about psychology if you don't think there is a psyche. I will discuss that part. I will show later on what I mean by soul. Certainly Christ used the word soul. For example, you shall love the Lord thy God with all thy soul, and with all your mind, and all your heart, and with all, you can do anything. I mean, you can, definitely the word soul is used in the New Testament. But we'll have to define it. And Mr. Armstrong was right in saying that there is no soul. But by that he meant, inside man, you mustn't think there is some kind of fluffy substance, which when you die, just leaves the mouth and you can see it sort of floating away. There is nothing like that. And that's not how we're going to define the word. So we are saying that physically, psychologically, and spiritually, he was good. That means the order. So all these things mean, so long as you mean order, then it couldn't be better. I put order here because I don't want to put character down there. But people get confused on these terms only because they don't say what they mean, and they think, oh, he was good, he was bad. They mean character-wise. And I'm not putting character on there because I'm not muddled enough to speak about both things at the same time. I'm going to speak one thing at a time. Now, this man had the power, better you remove this point about the yellow lines. So, he made... He made man then in such a refined order. So man was well ordered in every way possible. But at the same time, he had when we say he was well ordered in mind, that means he could think. He can think. He can make decisions. He has emotions. Can make judgments. Etc. I don't have to put it. He has imagination. He can imagine things. He can do all sorts of things. Now, if he can make decisions, he has free will. Notice that. One of the qualities of man is the same quality that God has. God has a will. God willed man. God has free will. So man has free will. Man decides. Man makes decisions. So man is exactly the same. He reflects God. Remember we said originally, I said, what comes out of a physical body is physical body. I say what comes out of our lungs, which are physical, is air, which is physical. What proceeds from God, who is spirit, is spirit. And what proceeds from God, who has a will, right, has a will. And that man has a will. But that is by God's will. Later on, we're going to see that this piece of paper I have in front of me was made differently from the way man was made, and therefore this piece of paper doesn't have a will. But God willed man to have will, and so on. I'll discuss that in a minute. The point here is that God willed human beings into existence who can make decisions, who have free choice. To free choice, that means they have the choice of doing this. Here's the free choice. They stand on God's will. They have a choice with regard to this line. They can decide to remove it if they want to and die. They have the ability to pull the plug out of the wall, if they so desire. Now you may say, why then did not God make human beings in such a way that they could not sin, or that they would not sin, or something along those lines? Well, if you ask that question, then you have to understand, we have to analyze man's nature. To find the answer to that, we have to analyze the nature of man. We've been analyzing the nature of God. We said, God creates man. Here is man then. Man. And we analyzed God, and now we have to analyze man. So we have to do that. We have been saying enough things about God all this time. Now we've got to say what man is, because we have to study man, the way he is, and find out to see any hints as to why God made him in that way. The Bible says, why hast thou made me thus? And so on. What? God chose to make man in that way. So let's discuss then some questions regarding man, man's nature. And the reason for which I want to discuss it is the mistakes that have been made. That's the reason. I want to correct the mistakes. One of the mistakes that have been made is that God knew that man would sin. Now that seems to be a question about God's knowledge, but it isn't. See, if that is God's knowledge only, then we have defined the word to know in such terms that I would have no problem with this question. But that's not what people mean by that. They mean that God made man mortal because he knew that man would sin, and he had really no choice in the matter. That's the offending part. In other words, the statement that I have heard goes something like this: that God made man mortal so that he would not be condemned to the fate of the evil angels and live in outer darkness forever. Something like that. And I want to show that is wrong. It is wrong to say that God knew that man would sin in the sense of predestinating sin. I want to show that man was not predestined to sin. Now, if God knew, well, let's start differently. Let's accept for the moment that God made man out of flesh because he knew that flesh would sin. He says, since I know that man is going to sin, let me make him out of flesh, because then he can sin, and he will sin. If he did that, then that would show that God wanted man to sin. Then that would be not, man would not be good. You would have to put that into his psychology, in other words, because it comes with the body. Maybe I'll start, let me start again, because we get lost in this. So, let's suppose that God made man out of flesh, because God knew that if he made him out of flesh, man would sin. That tells me that God wanted man to sin. And that would make God not good. God is not good. And therefore, man would not be good. Right. So obviously we reject that possibility. Now the next possibility is that God made man out of flesh because he knew that any other substance would result. Any other substance would make him sin. In other words, if God says, well, look, I don't want him to sin, so I better make him out of flesh. And man ends up sinning. Well, that shows that God didn't know quite a lot of things. He did not have enough wisdom. He was not omniscient. And that we have to deny because he denies God. And the last possibility is that God made man out of flesh because he knew that no matter what he made him of, man would sin. Well, then God is not very wise because he doesn't know enough to avoid sin, which again is a limitation on God, and that throws God out of existence. And I am saying that the problem is that the premise that I started with is faulty. Because I said, let's accept as a premise that that God knew, they all knew that man would sin. We said, if we say, God knew that man would sin, therefore he made him out of flesh. That means he would sin. So the answer is, let me write the answer, is that the answer, God did not want man to sin. That's the answer. God did not want man to sin. That means it was not, it was not God's will for man to sin, which means that his being made out of flesh has nothing to do with man's ability to sin. Man's sin. Now that corrects the mistakes. But you know what that does? That throws out complete theologies, right, presented in the last 2,000 years, which say, which are dualistic in the sense of matter draws us to sin, right, and the spirit does something else. That throws them all out. They're all wrong on that point. Unless I have some mistake here. I don't think I have a mistake. I gave those three reasons there to show that if we start with the premise that God did want man to sin, then either God is not good, right, or he is not competent, or he is not wise. It has to be one of those. So you're denying God. We do not want to deny God, so we have to say God did not want man to sin. That's his will. His will is that man would not sin. Right. And when God made, and God is wise, therefore he made made man out of flesh without desiring man to sin. That shows to me that man's being made out of flesh is not decided because so as to enable man to sin. That's got nothing to do with it. Absolutely nothing to do. And theologians who write along those lines are wrong and misguided. Now you may say, why then is man in matter? Now we have to say one more thing along those lines. When in John Genesis chapter 1 verse 26, he says, in our image, which I explained in the paper already. So we finished with that part. That this does not refer to the bodily construction of man, because God is not matter. And because God has no shape, and God has no form, and therefore we already went through all that. And God is not in space, and God is not in time, and man is not similar to God in those respects. And we are saying also, just to clarify the clear the air again, that Genesis 2:7, where it says, use the verb asa, which most people would say that asa means to form, as a potter forms and fashions. So God formed man out of the dust of the earth. I have no problem with that. But that does not tell me that it's not, that man was not created from nothing. Right. In Genesis 2:7, he says God made man. Now that word man is Adam. Now in Hebrew that's the word Adam. In Greek the word is anthropos. I put a line over the O because that is the standard way of showing the omega. In Greek, in other words, you write so, it's the omega. The omega, to distinguish the two, we put a line over it. So when he says he created man, he made Adam. That does not mean a male. A male human being. It doesn't mean that at all. He makes, and that's a horrible misunderstanding. And the reason he's called Adam is because it comes, the word is from Adama. Adama is the earth. So Adam means earthy. So it is not a proper name. Later on in Genesis, it is treated as a proper name. But in the beginning, it isn't.